Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
That is the great Molly Hatchet. And if anybody knows anything about Southern fried rock and roll, then you know Molly Hatchet. Well, welcome aboard the program. I'm your captain for this two-hour pleasure cruise, where on Saturdays we forget about all the evil in the world and we talk about things that really matter to Americans. And that, my fine athletic friends, is sports. And we got a lot of sports to talk about. Of course, there's always a lot to talk about. Now, in the NFL, and we know we're in training camps, and this is when things start, you know, raveling and unraveling, if you will. Well, it's only a matter of time before these teams have scrimmages, and every time they have a scrimmage, there's always good fights, and that's what I like to see. I want to see anger in these players. I want to see them fight. I want to see the fight. You are modern-day gladiators. Put up a fight. You don't have to be a good sportsman to be a good sportsman. You have to fight. Well, it looks like Burrow with the Bengals. Oh, I remember when he came up. We all remember when he came up, and he was doing really good, and then he got hurt. And then he come back the next year, and, well, he went to the Super Bowl. Well, this year he's hurt again, and I watched the video. He's got a calf strain. He should be able to get through this. But they say he's going to be out of practice for several weeks. What does several mean in NFL language? That could be one or a million. It nobody knows. But they also could be doing a lot of this to psych people out. The NFL is famous for psyching out the other teams. Oh, I saw a quarterback. Oh, my God. How many times did we hear Belichick? Oh, we don't know. Brady's, you know, he's day by day questionable. We don't know if he's going to play. We just don't know. We don't know nothing. And then Brady went out and played. So, again, we don't really know the extent of his injury, but it is a calf strain. And if you've ever strained your calf, it kind of hurts, you know, especially if you're a quarterback where you need your legs. And, yeah, it can hurt. So he's got a couple of weeks off. He'll be all right. The Cubbies are now on a roll. Well, good for the Cubbies. Zeke Elliott, speaking of the Patriots, it looks like Zeke Elliott is wanting to go with the Patriots. Now, whether Belichick sees something in him and can use and abuse him for one season to, well, propel the Patriots to get in, back into the playoffs? Playoffs? Yeah, that's right. Playoffs without the Patriots? I mean, we haven't seen that in over 20 years. Well, except for the last three. But the Patriots got to get back. Zeke Elliott, I've never been a big fan of. But, hey, Belichick sees something in him. He can turn him, and he can do what he needs to do with him and get him into the right position, the right place at the right time, to make a touchdown that will, well, make the Patriots win the game. We'll find out. Well, Seth does this week. As always, he's got This Week in Sports, and he tells me that he's got some good stuff, and it's interesting. So we're going to find out with that. That's always a great segment, Seth, in This Week in Sports. So, and when Viper comes on, he will be talking about Netflix Quarterback. So if you've got Netflix, tune in to Quarterback. Now, I'm on episode 3. I'm almost done with episode 3. Every time I watch it, something happens, and I got to go downstairs, or the phone rings, or this or that. Something's happening, so it's taking me forever to watch it. But I finally got halfway through season 3. And it is kind of interesting, and it does give insight into these guys, why they're going with Mariota, I don't know, but nevertheless, and Viper is right. does give a new appreciation for the position of quarterback. And when you're watching this and you're like, ay, 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 how the hell do these guys get back up again? Well, I don't know. I'm sitting on the couch choking on my guacamole. So I don't really know how they do it, but they do it. And thank God that they do, because hell, half the time I'm in traction watching some of these hits. So Viper's going to give us some insight on that. So let's bring the crew on board now. We got both. We got Sep and Viper. So it looks like Sep is number one on the top of the list here. So let's bring Sep on board. Sep, my good friend, welcome aboard. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday, everyone. Shabbat shalom.
Well, I do have to say I'm glad that Blog Talk Radio is fixing their microphone problems, because I get on today and they say our Direct Connect has some new changes. So I went on there and I thought, okay, well, they have obviously had microphone problems. So that would explain the microphone problems that we've had for the last couple of weeks. And it was not me screwing up. So just to let you know. But anyway, we're on board now. My microphone's working. I'm working. Seth is working. And now we're going to bring Viper. Where's my mic? Oh, there we are. Viper, welcome aboard and happy Saturday.
Hey, good to be here. Shabu Shabbat.
Yes, Shabbat Shalom or something like that, Seth. You had a holiday yesterday, didn't you?
Yes. I just quoted the name of the third album.
Well, do you get presents for this kind of holiday, or is it something more religious?
No, this one was a bad one. It was the morning of the destruction of the temple. So, and it was for 9 days.
Wow. I wish Christians would have...
We only ate fish. We only ate fish as part of stuff. Yes.
Well, you guys don't eat pork, do you?
No.
Oh, that is... How do you not eat bacon? Oh,
bacon.
I love
my God.
Actually, we eat beef bacon, and it's kosher, and it blows your mind. It's way better than your bacon. Way better.
Turkey bacon's tolerable.
No, I didn't mention turkey bacon. I went beef, kosher, but yeah, it's like $10 a pound, and it'll rock your socks.
Well, good, because I love bacon. I mean, and it's terrible for you because it's nothing but fat. But I'm already fat, and I'm old, so I'm at the point in my life where I don't give a damn anymore. Give me the fat. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not going to impress the ladies anymore. I'm past that point. I'm not going to impress the ladies anymore. I used to be. I used to be a hunk. I was a good-looking man. And I wasn't fat, and no, I had the ladies. But, you know, you get into that age, and things happen to you, and that's what happens with athletes. And speaking of which, this is a nice segue to go into Viper with the quarterback. I'm almost finished with episode 3. And like I was telling Seth, it's, you know, every time I sit down to watch it, I'm getting into it. And the stupid phone rings, or somebody downstairs needs me, or I got to do this, or I got to do that. But there's 8 episodes.
Or the cat breaks your favorite guitar.
I got it in a place where she can't do that no more. And if I didn't love my cat, she would have been dead. She would have been dead, the poor thing. But I want to get your take and describe to the audience, you know, what we're looking at and why we should really watch it. Now, you know, I'm that kind of guy. Seth doesn't have Netflix, so he's a little missing it. But I'm finding it, you know, you're seeing a lot more things than you probably should see. I mean, you know what I mean? You're seeing almost too much, but... You're right, Viper. It does give you a new appreciation for the position of quarterback. That, wow. You know, I mean, really, we all see it every Sunday. But when you see it that close up, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I think what it does is it's really opening my eyes. And I'm someone that does have lived a life behind the scene of sports. And it's real easy for a lot of people out there to be the armchair quarterback and the
sure.
and the sports fan and complain and whine and, you know, how can you make that mistake? I'm going to tell you how people make mistakes really, really easily. Okay? The game of football is not easy. The game of the position of quarterback is even less easy. And I think it does two things. It opens your eyes to how hard that position really is, the pressure that's involved with it, but also that, you know, we kind of forget these are people. You know, these are guys that are married. These are guys that have families. They have children. And
they pull
know,
their pants up just like we do, the same way.
Well, and I think everyone out there should probably use their own life experience for 5 seconds and say, look, when your employer treats you like a number and you're just another cog in the wheel and you're just another employee, just another paycheck that they're dishing out, you get pretty upset when they don't look at you like a person. Well,
mm-hmm.
what do you think we're doing as fans? What do you think we're doing as fans when
yep.
we say this guy sucks or this guy's no good or whatever? I know they're getting a lot of money, but you know what? When you see this show, you see why they're getting a lot of money. They have a skill set not many people have. And whether that skill set is being a world-class surgeon or being the greatest legal mind in whatever country you're in or the greatest CEO, all those people that have a unique skill set get paid a lot of money. So why should we treat 32 of the best people at their job any differently? And I just think that, you know, it's a real eye-opener to how hard the position of quarterback is. And if you're a football fan at all, you've got to watch this. You've got to watch this to really get a feel for what that lifestyle is like.
And Viper, wouldn't you say that these quarterbacks, that the hits that they take every single play, not just here and there, every single play, and they get up and they do it over and over again. Now, does it make more sense that you've been watching this series and saying when the owners, the teams talk about prototypical quarterbacks that they want to get, they are the guys that are 6'4", 6'5", 220, 260, because they can take hits and get back. That's it. It's
yep.
not athleticism. It's not this or that. You can take the hit and you can get back up.
Well, I think those hits, I think you have to have more it's a little more mental than physical, because sometimes when you get hit, your mind immediately goes, oh my God, I'm out, because you got hit so hard. Well, these guys get hit hard every single play, and you cannot have that mental, whatever you call it, in your head that I just got hit hard, now I'm out. You get hit hard, you're not, your mind, they don't even recognize it. It's just part of the game. But they do realize it after the game when Kirk Cousins is in that ice pool and he's showing all of his bruises. You know, so they do feel it. And they have to do a lot to recondition themselves for the next week. And
yeah.
quarterbacks, and running backs are the same way. Tight ends. And that might explain why tight ends and running backs, you've got an average, 3 years in the NFL? And, you know, how some of these quarterbacks can go this many years. And when you could go 20 years like Rodgers, and you can go 18 or 17 years like Stafford, and 42 years with Brett Favre, I mean, and look at Joe Montana. That guy took hit after hit after hit, and he even broke his back. And then he gets out for a year, and he still comes back. And Joe Montana, he's bigger than us, but he's not that big of a guy compared to these other 400-pound linemen. So,
right.
Yeah, you need to...
But here is a real question, though. A lot of these guys that we look at them as Iron Men and so forth and so on, as quarterbacks that did this sort of stuff, Peyton Manning even playing after neck surgeries.
Yeah.
How are they going to end up when they get old? You know, we don't know. It might not be good at all.
Yep.
Well, I mean, that's why the NFL is doing what they can, because a lot of these concussions, and we have seen this, that concussions can make you, it can turn you mean, where you get angry. Look at, started with a P, with the, not Pickett, with Minnesota, the Minnesota Twins, the center fielder. When he got beamed in the eye. Puckett. Why was I thinking? I apologize for names. I can't remember a name. I just know who people are. Well, Puckett, after that, was always the nicest guy in the world. Well, after that, his career was over. He, you know, it really affected his brain. He started beating his wife, and they got divorced. And, of course, he died from that. So, yeah, head injuries are extremely serious. The NFL, I do believe, is doing everything they can, but there's only so much you can do. You know, life is going to be – you're not stronger than life. You're not stronger than nature. You can do the best you can, but you need to understand, you know, some things are going to happen.
No, but like everybody in real life does – hardcore things that are slightly dangerous or whatever. These
oh my God, I should have been dead 100 times already.
$1 million a year, but are they literally modern day gladiators? 100%.
Yes. Absolutely.
and you don't want to see how big some of these people can blindside you, run full speed. You don't want to see it. Not one.
And, you know, you look at Bosa. And Bosa was San Francisco. Either one of them. Well, if you look at the guy from San Francisco, Nick Bosa, he's not fat, and he's really not that wide. The thing about it is he's just built, and he's fast, which means, he's lean. He's a little bit leaner than your average lineman, but that makes him quicker and that makes him more agile and that makes him much easier to get to the quarterback. And when that guy hits you, he hits you. And I do like Viper with Mahomes talking about, yeah, I go up to these guys when they hit me. I let them know, yeah, you're a good guy. Yeah, it's a great hit, because I don't want them to think, you know, anything, because I don't want them to finish that hit. You know, because even he knows that these guys, if they were to really clobber him, that would be it.
I think that's the smart gamesmanship that he's doing totally.
Well, it's kind of sportsmanlike. It's like, hey, he acknowledged, hey, yeah, that was he calls him dog. Hey, that was a great rush, dog. Which, you know, it was a great rush. And there's nothing wrong with complimenting. You know, your other players, you don't really want to, you got to be careful with it because you don't want to look like you're, you know. But, no, those guys, I mean, when you're that big and you're running that fast, that quickly, because you got to figure, I mean, you look on the line and Bosa is a tight end. So he doesn't have that far to get to full speed, and how these guys get to that speed in that short a distance.
Well, and I think one of the things in the NFL that people can forget is everybody romanticizes their decades that they were memorable players or this or that. No, this league, every single year for the last 30 years, the guys have gotten bigger, stronger, and faster at every single position. You go out in that field right now, and you play one play, You could be hurt for the rest of your life if it ends up wrong.
Well, that's a good example, because remember with the Jaguars, and I had his uniform, and again, I can't remember his name. It started with a B, number 8. Well, he was, do you remember him? What was his name? The
Burloin?
Quarterback. No.
Yeah, Burloin.
It was not Burloin. I got his jersey. So I had his jersey a long time ago. Number 8, the Jaguars, he was the quarterback, and he was the biggest quarterback
left-hander?
Ever. And they were, what?
Was he left-handed?
I don't remember. Well, it wasn't Burrow. What the hell was his name? Seth, look that up. Quarterback for the Jaguars.
Brunell.
Yeah, there
that's
you go.
Right. Well, when he came up, everybody was criticized, oh, he's too big to be a quarterback, because he was. He was a big guy, what, 6'5", 6'4", something like that. And now we look at these quarterbacks, and if you're not 6'4", you know, those days of Doug Flutie are over. And Doug Flutie, say whatever you want, he's 5'8". He was a midget. But he won more than he lost. So you can say whatever you want to about the guy, and I love my Doug Flutie. But, no, you're right. They have gotten stronger. And to be a quarterback today, and Mahomes, if you look at Mahomes, Mahomes is what, 5'9", 5'10"? That guy's got – he's got something, because that guy does
he's
take a lot
two.
Of hits. Is he? Well, when
you
look at him,
so, but yeah.
You wouldn't think he's 6'2". No way.
Right.
But, yeah, you definitely have to be – feet now to play quarterback and even running back. I mean, you know, those little guys, and even look at McCaffrey. He doesn't look that big, but I guarantee you stand him up against me, I'm going to be the midget. But you put these, it's just a weird comparison. You put a guy like McCaffrey up against all these other guys, he looks small. But he's not.
Well, because no one can catch him. No one can catch him. No
well,
one.
Well, you know, that guy
like
a very, yeah, a very exciting player. I'm so glad that he finally got the hell out of Carolina. He wasn't going anywhere with Carolina. And when he came to San Francisco, that's a perfect team for him.
Oh,
well,
no. And it was crazy. San Francisco really didn't have to trade anything away. They just picked up his contract. And San Francisco, to me, is the best NFC team for the last 5 years that has done nothing only because of injury.
Mm-hmm.
Even injuries to – you're in the NFC Championship last year – and Purdy gets hurt, and he has to come back in, and you're like, oh, my God. If Purdy never got hurt, they go to the Super Bowl
and win it. Yeah.
And
no,
probably win it. And probably win it.
Well, no, I got to agree with you, Seth. Pound for pound, San Francisco right now. Yeah, now you got to assume that they're healthy. Pound for pound, San Francisco is without a shadow of a doubt the best team in the NFL. But they just can't stay healthy.
And when you say not stay healthy, I'm talking about an entire team.
Now I want to.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
No, it's so crazy how many injuries they have had in the last 5 years. And even 5 years ago when they ended up almost 500, and people were like, oh, San Francisco. I'm like, because half their team was hurt. So this is not a new thing. This is they have the best team in the NFL if they're ever 100% healthy or even close to 100%. 90.
No, you're absolutely correct. But I want to ask you, Viper, and no, you're right, Seth. I mean, 100%. But, Viper, what is your opinion on why they're injured? And I know it's not conditioning because that team, the way they play, they're conditioned. Is it because they play at 150% rather than 100%? I mean, is that why they're getting hurt, because they're playing harder than everybody else? Or is it just bum luck?
Sorry, I must have ducked out. So you're asking if it's dumb luck?
No, I'm asking is why San Francisco is injured. We do got a caller on board. If you do want to speak, press for number one, and we'll bring you on. But I want to find out, you know, what really explains their injuries? Is it because they're playing harder than everybody else? And you can't say it's not conditioning, because the way these guys play, they have to be conditioned. But are they playing harder than everybody else? Is that why they're getting injured? Or is it just, like I said, bum luck? Sometimes, you know, life throws you curveballs.
It could be a combination of all those things. I mean, with the experience I have, I mean, I've been that coach that, you know, overworked my players and it resulted in more injuries. And, you know, that I think rest and, you know, going lighter on the athletes is a bit underrated. You know, it could be something in the weight room. It could be what the strength and the conditioning coaches are doing. A lot of it, though, I think is the volume of work that the athletes are putting in. And, you know, the Lions had a couple of Alabama guys picked up, and they interviewed one of them in training camp. And they were asked, well, compared to being in Alabama with Nick Saban, what's the difference between training camp and the NFL and this? And he goes, well, it's just as hard and demanding, but they don't try to kill you here in the NFL. I think what he's saying is Nick Saban's pretty brutal. He demands an awful lot. And but the NFL is smart. They look at the athletes as investments. They're not trying to prove a point.
Yeah,
they're not trying
to, you
know,
as a college coach like Nick Saban, how many NFL dudes has he produced in his lifetime?
Right. And he's got guys behind guys that could be All-Americans. He's got All-Americans in the lineup and a potential All-American right behind it. So if he suffers an injury, it's not that huge a deal for his program. So he's able to push the kids harder. But, no, when I look at a rash of injuries, I look at two things. I look at the volume of work the coaches are putting on. You know, how are they doing when they're in pads? Are they doing a lot of Oklahoma drills where they're pounding on each other all the time? You know, how are they managing practices? And then two, what's happening in the strength and the weight room? Because those are the two areas where I think a lot of the injuries are either born or happening. And, you know, I think that might be the areas I look at when it comes to San Francisco. But there's also a little bit of a wild card in terms of, you know, just dumb luck. Sometimes you do have just dumb luck.
San Francisco is the last 5 years with so many injuries. I mean, when I say so many injuries, and every NFL team has increased. No, they've had injuries, past injuries. It allowed second-string guys, third-string guys, fourth-string guys to get real playing time, and also good. That's why people don't understand how good this team is if they're 100%.
Now, I'm going to sound like a total conspiracy theorist here. But if you look at the team of San Francisco, and San Francisco, throughout its history, has had you know, a number of really, really good football teams. They've never really been plagued with a lot of injuries. They've had injuries like every other team, but nothing like this. Well, if you look at when San Francisco moved to actually Santa Clara, which is a little southeast of San Francisco, say whatever you want, but maybe there's something in the water here. But, you know, I mean, look at the evidence. They go to Santa Clara and they're constantly injured. Now, who knows with that? I mean, again, nobody really knows. I don't know what the explanation is. Nobody knows. Could it be bum luck? Yeah. Could it be this? Could it be that? Who knows? But when San Francisco is healthy, that is a very, very exciting team to watch. And then when Purdy came in, after all the quarterback problems that they had, starting with Kaepernick, and then with this and with that, and then, I mean, Mr. Irrelevant, the last pick, who's not even supposed to even be on the team. He's supposed to be drafted, but he's not supposed to make the team. He's supposed to go to the practice squad. He's supposed to stay there for the rest of his career. He's not supposed to do anything. And then he gets up there and then he gets injured? Please. I don't know what it is, but no, that is a very exciting team. I really look forward to them this year. I hope they stay healthy. I really hope Purdy really gets better, and I hope Burrow gets better. But it looks like now they're trying to do quarterback number two, the second season. However, a lot of quarterbacks are saying no. I'm reading this story here now, and they don't want any part of it. And I kind of understand that as a performer myself. I hate it. One thing I absolutely hated, and I rarely participated in it, and when I did, I probably more than likely had an attitude, and I probably came off as a jerk. But one thing I hate is to sit there and talk to laymen about what I'm doing and have to dumb it down and ask the stupidest questions and do that kind of crap. You just want to focus on your work, whatever your work is, whether it's acting or whether it's playing quarterback or whether you're the kicker. It doesn't matter what it is. You want to focus on that. So I can relate to some of these athletes not wanting to do that. And I can also relate to that stupid, ridiculous Hard Knocks. I don't want to see that crap as a fan because, you know, it's like I don't want to see the magician how he does his tricks. I want to be amazed and I want to be confused and I want to be, you know what I'm saying? Too much information sometimes is just too much. But I do like it so far in season three. They're getting a little too with the family and all of this and that. And I understand it. You got families and this and that. And I get it. I think it's good. But I can understand as an athlete why you don't want to go through that because you just want to focus on your job. So we'll find out if there's another season two or not. But you know, really, how far can you really go with this? I mean, how many seasons can you really go with this? I don't see it really lasting a long time, but I do see the importance of it because, and you're right, Viper, it does give an insight into the position of quarterback, and I don't think you need to dwell on it and do another season of it because I think we get the point. Even, look, I only finished 2.5 episodes. You got the point by the first episode. You know what I mean? You got the point.
Right.
These guys are going through hell. So,
well, and I think that it's going to be ratings driven. They're going to do it again. You know they are because the ratings were there, and you know, whether it's successful or not, and if they can repeat A lot depends on who they follow. You know, it's going to depend on that. But I can't see them not doing it with the ratings they're getting.
Yeah, well, you know, again, I mean, would you really want somebody following you every step of the way? You're trying to focus on the season. And how Patrick Mahomes
was able to do that
and then go out and win the Super Bowl.
Right.
That was
and
kind
they won
of impressive.
The Super Bowl on top of it, yeah. That's impressive.
You know, well, also impressive, which I, as much as, and everybody knows who listens to this show, you know I am not an Eagles fan. But I do have to admit they did have a really good team until they came to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought the Eagles were going to beat them. I really didn't. I was surprised that the Kansas City Chiefs played the way they played. And they outsmarted them, and they outplayed them, and they outbeat them, period. Fair and square. There was no cheating. There was no referee shenanigans. You know, there was
still talking about a relatively close scoring game. So it wasn't like it was just a massacre.
No, it was a good football game.
Yeah, and you guys will see it in the last episode, because the last episode of the show is the Super Bowl. And
you could hear
Mahomes mic'd up on that controversial holding call that kept the Chiefs drive alive. And Mahomes was calling a hold almost immediately after he threw the ball, almost like before he threw the ball. He could see his receiver being held. And that kind of, because I remember that play was so controversial.
Yep.
And it's like, if they're seeing it on the field and he's calling it almost as the ball's coming out of his hands, that had to be a hold. I'm sorry. I mean, these guys, that's their livelihood. That's their craft. And if he saw that immediately, as soon as he did, there's no question that that flag was the right call.
Well, these guys can see things different than us because they know how it's supposed to be.
Yep.
And just the lighting knows. The images are different than what it's supposed to be. They know immediately what it is. When you get used to doing
yep.
things a certain way and you see something, just the light is different, the image, anything that's different, you're going to be able to pick up on that immediately. You're going to know. But overall, I thought it was a I didn't have any interest in either one of the teams, no invested interest at all. But
right.
I did enjoy the game because it was a good football game. I didn't think it was great
yep.
Super Bowl. I just thought it was another good football game. That's all it really was. It really wasn't anything spectacular. It really wasn't. It was no real excitement, unlike the year before or the 2 years before when Brady comes back after being down 100-0. That was total wow. That was just nuts. That was incredible. But, you know, I am looking forward to the scene, and that's what I was wondering, if they went through, you know, to the Super Bowl, how far they were actually going to go, you know. But, no, I'm looking forward to that. But Kirk Cousins, you know, doggone it, I'd like to see Minnesota. I don't know what's going on with that team. But Kirk Cousins, and we saw it when he was with Washington. Kirk Cousins is not a bad quarterback. You know, he's really
no,
– I
he's
didn't
not.
Like
I
the
mean,
fact that – well, go ahead.
Well, no, and I think that he has too much of a knock because he can't win the big one. Guys, he's got to be a top 10 quarterback. He's got to be in the top third of the league. And he's a fourth-round draft pick. And, I mean, he put up an impressive year last two years. So clearly he's gotten better over time. I mean, you know, a lot of people really – I mean, Dan Marino didn't win the big one, but no one will ever deny he was a great quarterback. So I think really, it really opens up your eyes to – you can't get so focused on Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl. That's stupid. That's an unrealistic expectation.
Yeah, I think I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of times the title games are better games than the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Because
well, no, but here's the thing with Kirk Cousins is Kirk Cousins is going to get you into the playoffs. Kirk Cousins is maybe going to get you into the playoffs at a nice seed. Kirk Cousins will not win you a playoff game. And
well, wait a minute. Let me ask you something here. Can you really put all the onus of their loss on Kirk Cousins?
Yeah.
No, I think that's what I learned watching this is that when he's on the sideline, when a quarterback's on the sideline, there's nothing he can do. I mean, there's nothing he can do.
What?
At some point in time, a defense has got to make a stop. At some point, an offensive lineman has got to make a block. You know, you watch these guys get plowed on the field level with these cameras in this series, and the mics hear the impact on the microphones. I mean, what's the guy supposed to do? I mean, you know, and you'll get to it later on when you watch it. But there's one episode where I forget what game it was. Kirk Cousins. He ended up throwing it was fourth down and like 12, and he ended up throwing it to T.J. Hockenson in the flat, the tight end, and it was well short of the first down. But they replayed they replayed that play, and Cousins said, Jefferson was double covered, Phelan was covered, there was no way to get him the ball. He took what the defense gave him, and he just said, the defense played better that play than we did.
Right.
What's he supposed to do? Throw an interception? No, he threw to the guy that was open and threw to what the defense gave him. There's only so much a guy can do when he's in that position. Now, he has more impact than the left guard does. He has more impact than the tight end does. But he can't control everything. And that's one thing that show taught me.
Well, speaking of that, of not being able to control, Al Michaels, who can be a total jerk when he wants to be, was a total jerk to Boomer Esiason. Well, when I was living in Massapequa, I lived right next to Boomer, who was in Seaford, which is the next town right over. It's right there.
Yeah, I know where
he's. And I drive my cab by his house all the time. Well, Boomer had talked. He said, yeah, Al Michaels wants to criticize me for not ever winning the big game. But when I left the field, we were ahead. We were winning when I went off that field. So you can't blame Boomer Esiason for the Bengals losing the game. You know who you blame? You blame John Candy because Joe Montana noticed him in the crowd. And that's when he threw the winning touchdown. So you can blame John Candy for that one. But, no, you're absolutely correct. Sometimes you can't blame the quarterback for everything. You can blame him for some things. You can blame the kicker for a lot of things. You can blame a lineman. You can blame a running back for fumbling. You can blame a linebacker for not tackling. You can blame anybody for anything. You can blame the coach. You can blame the peanut vendors for crying out loud. But
I think on the one play that I was mentioning, Cousin just said the defense kind of had us beat that play. Sometimes, if not the lack of play by a player, sometimes it's the really good play of whoever is opposing that player. And I think it's too easy to just say, oh, well, it's the quarterback's fault or that player's fault, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's too easy to blame the single person because instead of giving credit to where credit's due, Kirk Cousins gave credit, I think it was the Eagles, gave credit to the Eagles defense and said, yeah, they called the right play on us on that one, that we didn't have anything to go off of. Sometimes it's scouting. Sometimes it's execution. And I think seeing behind the scenes how hard. I mean, here's, you'll get to the episode too. I think you're almost there. They change the names of these plays every week. Every week, they have to learn new verbiage. They have to learn new words. They have to new play calls.
Omaha.
And it's just I mean, yeah, they've got a different name every single week. It's incredible.
Well, you almost have to because, you know, teams are going to be watching you, and when they're practicing for that week, they've already got the videotape of you, and they can hear the calls that you're saying. So when you're calling out the 32 left, you know, whatever, blah, 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 well, they record that, and they watch what they did with that call. So they know what you did. Well, if you're not changing up, that team is going to beat you because they're already going to know what you're going to do. As a quarterback, well, again, it's all the team members because it's not just a quarterback that has to learn these new names. It's the rest of the players because if the linemen don't know I'm supposed to go left when I'm really supposed to go right, then the running back is going to be running into a wall rather than a hole. So everybody has to learn it. And to get 54 guys to learn the same thing within a week is not easy.
And sometimes in a professional game, and you see a quarterback that throws a ball that is an easy pick, and you're like, why did that even happen? You're like, that new wide receiver had no idea where they were supposed to be for that route. Not one.
True.
Well, that's what we saw last year with Tom Brady. And you can say that with Aaron Rodgers because they're throwing the ball where they're supposed to. And Brady is not a kind of a quarterback that doesn't know where he's supposed to throw the ball. I'm sorry, but Tom Brady knows where he's supposed to throw the ball, and the receivers were not catching it. And even if they did touch it, they wouldn't catch it. So I got to blame those on the other players for – you can't blame Tom Brady. And the same thing when Brett Favre went over to the Vikings. You can't blame Brett Favre because of these play. Oh, he couldn't. He didn't connect. He didn't connect. He did connect. The problem is these guys couldn't catch the ball. This guy's still 45 years old, and he's throwing the ball at 100 miles an hour. They can't catch it. They couldn't keep up with Brett Favre. Brett Favre had a gun. That guy could throw hard. I wouldn't be able to catch that ball throwing as fast as he threw it. But, you know, the guys that can, you know, you got to be able to throw it fast because you don't want anybody else to come close to it. But you can't blame Brett Favre for his numbers. He threw the ball right at him. Brady last year, how many times did we see Brady throw the ball right at these guys? Couldn't catch it. Same with Rodgers. Right. I mean, the freaking ball was accurate. It was an accurate throw. It's the receivers that don't catch the ball, but the quarterback gets the blame.
And what's so sad is when you see great quarterbacks at the end that still have some semi-decent wide receivers, and they can't catch them, and you're like, are you kidding me?
Right.
Oh, man. This would have been totally different. But, nope, that's what happens to all of them. Yeah, the wide receivers suck.
Well, look, wide receivers and running backs right now are a dime a dozen. There's a million of them. So if you want to be a wide receiver or a running back in the NFL, you have to be better than everybody. I mean, you have to stand completely out. You cannot be a hackneyed running back and make it in the NFL. Because you're just going to be replaced with somebody else who's then going to be hackneyed, and they're going to replace him with somebody else. So, and the biggest problem with running backs is fumbling. Well, you're running into a whole bunch of people. that are trying to tackle you and how you can keep a hold of that ball. If you want to do a segment, I think they ought to do running backs. They ought to do, instead of just doing quarterbacks, they ought to do running backs. They ought to do wide receivers. They ought to do linebackers. They ought to do safeties. They ought to do every single position. Kickers. They ought to do the kickers. You see what I'm saying with this Viper? Instead of just doing quarterback, you cover all the positions. Because there's more than one position in the NFL, and they're all equally important. You don't have any linebackers. What are you going to do? Well, you're going to lose a game. You don't have a safety. Well, you're going to lose a game. You don't have a kicker. Well, you're going to lose a game. The offensive lineman, if you can't block these guys, well, your quarterback gets sacked. You're going to lose the game. So I think Netflix ought to start doing other positions other than just quarterback. I mean, look what you could do with the running backs. Look what you do with the wide receivers, a tight end. My God, look at the amazing tight ends we have now, both offense and defense. We've got incredible tight ends right now in the NFL. And we got incredible guys that play both, you know, all three, tight end, wide receiver, and running back. I mean,
oh, no.
I had
the game of the NFL has changed so much in the last 20 years that 20 years ago, a fullback position actually was important. Now,
they don't even have a fullback.
A tight end position is actually important. Used to have big-time running backs. Now, I'd rather have three running backs at $3 million a year and see who even lasts the whole year being healthy. One big-time running back at $20 million and they're hurt week two? Your team is FOL?
Well, you know, I think it would be much more interesting than just do the quarterback with that, because if you start digging deep into some of these other players, especially defense players, your safeties and, you know, your cornerbacks, those guys, I guarantee you those guys have to go through more training and more preparation than you can imagine. But we don't see that part. We don't see Monday through Saturday. We don't see the practices. We don't see their training. We don't see what they do. We don't see what they do to get themselves prepared. And I guarantee you, you do that to those kinds of players and you're going to see a completely different, have a completely different perspective and new appreciation for every single player in the NFL, including the kicker. I know everybody thinks, oh, the kicker, all he's got to do is kick the ball. Really? Is that it? Well, if that's the case, then anybody can be a kicker, right? All you got to do is kick the ball? Just kick it? Really? I can kick.
No pressure.
Nothing to see here. Just another kicker. Well, I guarantee you if they did something like that, I think that'd be a lot more interesting. Let's find out more about these NFL players rather than just the quarterback. But see, people don't want that. Oh, we just want the flashy players. You want the flash. Well, I would rather take a win than the flash. If my team played like crap and they won the game, I'd be a lot more impressed than all the flashy crap that they did and still lost the game. Because that's what it's boiled down to, is to get the win. There's nothing to do with the flash.
No, but I think this type of show really shows that there's a difference between a professional athlete and everybody else, because the professional
and the weekend warrior,
do this every week. These routines, this, that, and now you're just seeing what they actually go through, and you're like, "Oh, I couldn't do that."
Well, you watch it, and what I'm watching is like, okay, yeah, you went through this whole season. Okay, well, they got to do it again. and again for at least 10 years. And if, you know, you're good, you do it for 20. Oh, that's not easy. No way. Yeah, over the conditioning that these guys go through in their bodies, why they're not more beat up than they actually are, well, that's a miracle. Again, I'm beat up just watching it on the couch.
Whew. Yeah, and you do get to see exactly how beat up they do get. I mean, that's... When you see what Cousins has to go through, like he was nursing an injury or had a problem with his ankle or whatever, and then Mahomes, what he went through with a high ankle sprain, you remember during the playoffs, like, oh, Mahomes is hurt, you know, and he gutted through in that playoff game, and, I mean, just crazy. It's just crazy.
I honestly don't know how Mahomes really is able to do what he does, because when you watch him sometimes, he looks very awkward and weird, very bizarre. And I think that's probably to his advantage, because when he does those passes where he's those no-look passes, and they're so awkward looking. It's like, how did you get that ball there with all these guys over there, and your throwing is awkward, and your body is completely twisted like a friggin' pretzel? I don't get it. Because when you watch Mahomes, if you're watching him, you're like, this guy's not that good. But look at the record.
And even some of those crazy throws, there's a Travis Kelce. And Travis Kelce, they asked him, they were like, how did you even know where that ball was going to be? And he was like, seriously, I never know. And they were like, what? And he's like, you just had a 4-touchdown day today. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
No, he's had a couple of 4-touchdown days. That Kelce's impressive. But, I mean, when you look at Mahomes and you watch him and you watch his body language and you're looking at this guy, nah. And then you're like, how did he do that? What just happened? How did that happen?
No, there was one time that Mahomes threw an underhanded ball. That was a pass to Kelce about 8 yards away, and he went into the end zone. And you're still like, what just happened?
Well,
really?
You know, you just reminded me, and Viper, I want to talk to you about this, because Mahomes really wanted to play baseball, and he does train by swinging like a pipe. And he does do, and he talked about doing baseball things that helps him for football. Well, I remember, that team, it was in like the 50s or 60s when the coach made them do ballet. Ballet! They made them do ballet!
Yep.
A football player doing ballet? Well,
was this a reason for it in Michigan?
Well, it was a college team, I think. I think it was college. It wasn't professional, I don't think. I don't remember, but I just remember the story. And my mother told me about this when I was a little kid. She'd always talk about that. And, well, there's reasons for that. Because, you know, sometimes training for just one thing, you're only training for one thing. You're not training for the unexpected things. And that, I think, is what really Mahomes, what makes him good, is because he takes these other skills that he's training for and other sports that he's used to, and when he gets to an unexpected moment, well, his instincts kicked in, and he went from football to baseball in less than a heartbeat. And, well, they won the game. And that, you know, sometimes training for something other than what you do can be, well, wax on, wax off. Perfect example. perfect example of that. This guy thought, what am I doing? I'm waxing his go these old cars? How is this going to help me with karate? Well, he did a hit, and he blocked it. And they did this. And he blocked. See? So waxing the car kind of helped you. So I think that's what really helps Holmes. After watching just, you know, 2.5 episodes, I think, well, 2¾. I think that's what really helps him is, you know, he trains for everything. And he is well-conditioned, and he's, well, spontaneous. He's got instincts.
Oh, no. And I remember the team that they did the ballet, but if you look at people that were Hall of Famers, like real professional football players, that actually still took ballet classes, Lynn Swann and Herschel Walker, you can't say either one of those guys weren't any good.
No. They weren't very good at all. Well, you know, dancing for a running back would be perfect because it's all about your feet. And how many times have we seen a running back that can out-juke these, you know, 280-pound men that are coming at you full speed? Well, if you don't have that, you know, rhythm.
And Herschel Walker was not a small person.
No, he was a little large. He was an XL, to say the least.
So him dancing around you and getting around you, you're like, what just happened? I didn't even touch this big person, and I'm a defensive person.
Well, I'll tell you right now, Barry Sanders can cut the rug. I guarantee you that guy can dance your ass off. I guarantee you the footwork that guy had. And we do got a couple of callers again. If you do want to join the show, we got Lou and we got other people. If you do want to join the show, just press number one. We'll bring you on. But no, that whole thing of ballet was just simply to get the guys, you know, the rhythm. And why do you think boxers, look what boxers do with jump roping. Why would you jump a rope? Well, you got to get your feet. And in boxing, your feet are everything. You got to be bouncy. You got to float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. And that's exactly what made Muhammad Ali good, was his feet. It was those moves that he did with his legs. And legs, people need to understand, are probably one of the most important things. Look at a catcher. Catcher needs to have legs. A pitcher, you would think, oh, he uses his arm. Really? He uses his arm. He does? Well, yeah, he does. You don't think he uses his legs? You don't think a pitcher in Major League Baseball has to have strong legs? Please. Come on. That's where your kickoff comes from.
Women weaken legs.
Yeah, that's where it comes from. That's where you use your weight, and you got to be able to balance. And that's what that coach was trying to teach was balance. And in ballet, you know, balance. We do got a dog barking. Well, we do have Lou that wants to join the show, so let's join Lou, the Jets fan. Lou, my good friend, welcome aboard and happy Saturday. How you doing, my friend?
Thank you, Captain. Good to be on.
Well, we're good to have you. Well, we've been talking, for the whole hour and 10 minutes now on Netflix Quarterback. Have you seen it? Do you know what we're referring to, and do you have any commentary on it?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not able to get Netflix, but I have heard of it. I haven't been able to. So it's like I thought you were discussing that Bryant spinoff series, Call Me Higher, it was called. It was kind of like that because you make the reference to Karate Kid, and they have to use these moves. So it does tie into football, you know, with the ballet, because you know they need to use their whole body, you know, to get in shape. You know, they just don't use one part of it; they use the whole body. That's like, well, I get the thing with ballet. It may seem a little unusual, but, you know, I get the point, because they need the coordination. They need to keep the the ligaments. So I think I get it.
Yeah, well, in season three, Mahomes talks about that. He talks about doing the things that, you know, normally you don't do. And, again, I do believe that it really plays into the unexpected. Because if you're – how many times have we watched an NFL game and we saw something unexpected? How many times have we watched any sport and we saw something unexpected? That's what sports means, unexpected.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool when he was talking about that, because that brought me back to memories, because my mother used to talk to me about that all the time.
Yeah.
About, you know, doing things different. And yeah, acting, I would do different things. I would breathe. And people don't seem to realize that acting and swimming all have to do with breathing. I learned that in the Navy because I used to be a good swimmer, but...
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's breathing because you've got to keep the blood flowing and you got to keep that rhythm. It's a rhythm. It's a beat. Boom, boom, boom. It's a rhythm. It's a beat. It is musical in a way because you're moving and you're grooving. Well, you know, I learned that in the Navy because I was noticing these guys were going faster than me and I realized, wait a minute, I'm breathing wrong. So I started breathing correctly. When my head went down, I breathed out. When my head went up, I breathed in, and I kept that rhythm. And it took me a little while, but I just kept that rhythm going and going and going. And before I knew it, it became natural. And then I was able to keep the same thing with acting. I was wondering, why am I, you know, I'm giving out this line, and I'm just out of breath before I finish the line. Well, I realized, wait a minute, that's my breathing. So I would do breathing techniques. So, you know, just being an athlete, just doing the thing, and it doesn't matter what you do in life. If you're only going to train for one certain thing, that's all you're going to do is that one certain thing. But when you come to the unexpected, or you come to something you're unfamiliar, never seen before, well, you're going to lose. You're going to get beat. Well, we are into the second hour. So, Seth, what do you have for us?
The bonus is we get a second hour this week, Skeet.
Yes, I know. We've made it. Well, I don't know. You weren't online when it happened, but Blog Talk Radio, when I signed on today, they gave me this big message, and it's still on my screen here, and it says, our Direct Connect has some new changes. So I go on there thinking, what the hell's going on here now? Do I have to, what do I got to do? And they're talking about the microphone. They had microphone problems. So it was not my end. It was not on my end. It was on theirs, and they're fixing it. And we're fixed now, and we're moving. But, and so that's good. And we're 15 minutes into the second hour now, which is great.
Right.
But, Seth, you do
at
have
least we
some
didn't get cut off like last week.
Yeah, that I hate it. I hate
That's
I hate
happens.
Connection
That's
problems.
How you get on.
Ah. But anyway, Seth, you're telling me you've got some good stuff here for us tonight. So I'm going to leave it up to you. What do we have in this week in sports?
Well, we get some other stuff past that, but. Actually, this time of the year, everybody knows it's mostly baseball. But anyways, July 23rd, 1866, the Cincinnati Baseball Club formed the Cincinnati Red Stockings. And that is pretty much the beginning of Major League Baseball.
Well, the Reds are the very first professional baseball team. They have claimed that since that, and they are. They became the first professional baseball team.
But
well, actually,
that's a long time ago.
Well, you know, I'm starting to do a little bit more research, and I'm finding out there was a lot more baseball, especially after the Civil War. It really kind of took off. But it wasn't until the turn of the century where it really took off. But there was a lot of baseball in the 19th century.
Yeah.
A lot more than you think.
Oh, yeah, no, but I mean, this really marked the first beginning of real professional baseball. Now, July 24th, 1968, and this is something that people won't believe. They won't remember Hoyt Wilhelm. But Hoyt Wilhelm, on this day, pitches his 907th game, breaking Cy Young's record.
You're right. I don't believe it.
Well, Viper said he just got cut off. I didn't touch him. I wasn't touching anything. So call in again, Viper, if you're hearing me. Definitely bring you back, but I wasn't touching nothing.
No. Here's one, Skeet, though, that everybody as a baseball fan cringes, because you will remember this day. July 25th, 1990, Roseanne Barr sings
the national
anthem
of
the Red Padres game, and everybody cringed.
Well, I was in the Navy when that happened. I was in Long Beach, and she did it in San Diego. And, we were watching that game, actually, in the berthing.
Wow.
You can imagine patriotic sailors. We were not impressed.
No.
Not. I don't know what she was thinking, why she thought that was going to be funny. And then when she grabbed her crotch and spit, that's when I went, I'm sorry, but I lost all respect for her on that one. That just wasn't right. That's not funny.
Yeah.
You're singing the national anthem and you grab your crotch and spit? Seriously?
Right.
And that's supposed to be comedy? What? No.
No, and her rendition was so bad at the beginning. I think she kind of went with it, like, okay, it's bad, but I'll make it, like, more bad funny at the end. And it just made it worse, and it was cringe-worthy.
Well, what the hell were they thinking of bringing her up in the first place? It's like, well, look, when you sing the Star Spangled Banner, and I had a friend of mine back home who sang the Star Spangled Banner in front of the Lakers game. Well, before I moved to New York, he had died. And he had a beautiful voice. And we all know him. Everybody loved him. He had a beautiful voice. But when you sing the national anthem before any sporting event, you have to go through an audition. You can't just walk up and say, hey, I'll sing the Star Spangled Banner. Really? Oh, okay. No. You have to audition. So they knew goddamn good and well. Excuse my French, but... And I don't even speak the language. But they knew damn good and well what she was going to do before they did it. And that's another thing. That was just a poor attempt at...
How did you pass the audition?
Yeah, how did you pass the audition? I mean, God.
It was one of the most awkward moments in sports history, basically.
Well,
it was horrible.
Who was the other guy that's singing at a basketball? He was the runner.
Carl Lewis. I remember
Carl
that
Lewis,
sure.
That's
yeah.
it. Remember? When
oh,
he,
you're right.
I remember that.
And he tried
oh,
to get to the
exactly.
high note, and he goes, oh, excuse me, folks, I'm going to get there. I'm going to get there. And then he tried. He never got there. It's like, just give it up.
Yeah. That rugged
right.
Oh,
no one's
I
gonna
saw that game. I saw that game. I was like, oh, my God.
Oh. Wow, that's...
And the crowd knew it, and the players knew it. I was like, what the hell?
Well, why would you have the guy again? He had to audition.
Yeah.
He had to have sung that song before they brought him out there.
Right.
Well, maybe he just had a frog in his throat, or maybe he smoked too much weed before he went out there and tried to hit the high notes. Well, I do know that song. I do play it on my guitar. And the Star Spangled Banner, without a shadow of a doubt, you ask any musician, and they will tell you it is one of the hardest songs to sing, and I'll tell you why, because you're going through
yep.
one register, clear up to another, and then back down again. It's not an easy song to sing. It really
no.
isn't. But, I mean, my goodness, if you can't sing the Star Spangled Banner, okay, you're not alone. Even some of the greatest musicians can't sing it. So
no.
don't be embarrassed. Just admit, I can't sing the damn thing. I'm not going to embarrass myself and embarrass the
right.
entire crowd. Because when you were watching that on TV, Lou, you had to be a little bit embarrassed yourself. I mean, watching
I was.
That,
I'm
that,
like, what happened?
That's cringeworthy. You can't, you know.
I'm like, boy.
I mean, every time
I'm
you
like,
hear our vice president speak, it's
here.
The same thing. You know, I mean, and imagine her trying to sing the Star Spangled Banner. Good God. We're not talking politics tonight, so we're going to move on.
No, no,
so,
no, no.
So don't get me started. Seth, what else we got here?
Well, here's the sore subject, but I'll bring it up. July 26, 1984, Pete Rose ties Ty Cobb's 3,502nd hit.
Yep, that was a single.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
It was only just a single, because by that time he had a hell of a lot more than 3,000. He got his 3,000th hit. I think that he was with Philly when he got that one.
Well, this was 3,502.
But that was
yeah,
only for singles.
Ty Cobb's record for hits, period. But it was a single, yes.
No, no, those were only singles because Ty Cobb had 4,135.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just singles. Just
not,
singles.
Not doubles, triples, or home runs. Just singles.
Just singles. Yes, you are correct. 3,502.
Wow.
Well, I'm glad Pete got his last final hit with the Reds. I know we've talked to death that Pete should be back in the he should be in the Hall of Fame. I don't care.
Not gonna happen. Not gonna
I know.
Happen.
He'll get in there posthumously, and that is what is sick.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Yeah.
What difference does it really
yeah.
make whether you got some plaque in some cockamamie museum, you got 4,256. That number right there, 4,256 hits.
Yeah.
If that, come on now, you don't need to be in the Hall of Fame to know you're the greatest hitter in Major League Baseball, except
ever, ever,
ever. But you know that. Little Japanese guy, Ichiro, if that guy would have played his entire career in the major leagues, who's to say he wouldn't have gotten more than 4,256? Nobody
he
knows.
He would have.
more than likely probably would have. More than likely probably would have. But I'm glad it's Pete. Pete's a hometown guy. You know what I mean? And again, that's what baseball is missing. Baseball doesn't have your hometown guys anymore. Everybody on the team is from a different country. And world baseball, I'm not interested. I don't care. I want to see American baseball, Americans play in America, other people you play in your country. You want to have a world league? Then fine, have a world baseball league. Fine, but this is America. This is our country. This is our sport. We came up with it. We originated it. We crafted it. We molded it. We turned it into what it is, except for all these cockamamie new rules they got today. But I want to see hometown guys on the field. I don't speak Spanish. I don't know how to speak it. I don't understand it. I know hola, tacos, and burritos. That's it. You know, and I know some of the words to La Bamba, but that's it. I got nothing against the Spanish. The Spanish, Spanish-speaking people, there's nothing wrong with you. But, you know, I want to see hometown players playing the game. Yeah. I mean, when was the last time you saw a guy from your hometown in the major leagues? You don't see that anymore. And if you do, it's a rarity.
Yeah.
That's not prejudice. It's not racist. It's not anything other than what's wrong with having Americans play an American game.
Nothing.
And I know.
It's our game.
But we've had, you know, Spanish players, you know, come up through the league, you know, before. I mean, we've seen those guys before. And they've done really good, and we didn't have a problem with them. But they weren't monopolizing the sport.
No. Oh, no. And actually, what you're talking about is a real tragedy in the African-American aspect of American baseball. You'll barely find any people that are still playing baseball.
Well, black people are football or basketball. They're getting out of baseball.
Yeah, and it's really sad because baseball is actually the longest career you could have.
Absolutely.
But they don't want to do it. They don't want to do it.
Well, you could last longer probably. Well, no, actually basketball, they really don't because you're doing nothing but sprints. And when you're old, like me, you can't sprint.
Yeah, the thing about basketball that's different is you have to jump. That's not a normal exercise. But, you know, football and baseball, I don't know. Baseball, you can have a long, long career. Long career.
Yes.
Well, look how many. Well, look at Pete Rose. He was 24 seasons. Hank Aaron, he played 24 seasons.
24 years.
You know, look at Nolan Ryan. He played for at least 100. I mean, that guy. I mean, when I was a little kid, I knew who Nolan Ryan was. Here I was. I was 29 years old, about to turn 30, and I'm working in the office at a car dealership. I was a business manager. I was a finance manager. And here I am, almost 30 years, and he's still playing. And I'm thinking, this guy, how? Because everybody else that I saw when I was a kid had already retired for at least 15 years, and this guy's still going. That guy was a fluke.
No, and the crazy thing is like, when you saw him later in his career, Nolan Ryan, you're like, well, he never won a World Series. No, he won his rookie year in '69 with the Mets.
Yeah, but he didn't really play very much.
Gravy the whole time, dude. Gravy the whole time. I mean, you talk about no hitter, this, that, whatever. This guy was phenomenal. I mean, 20 years later, he's still pitching 100-mile-per-hour fastball.
And you know what is sad? What is really sad is that record that he had how many wins and how many strikeouts. He got the record for the most strikeouts in a season, and they give the Cy Young to Palmer? Which, look, Palmer was a good pitcher with the Orioles. Fine. But how Nolan Ryan never won the Cy Young? I mean,
oh no, right? Yeah, it's a sad sob story. On top of it all,
but towards the end, though, I mean, when he lost it to Palmer, I think is when Nolan Ryan had two no hitters in the season, and he had like 5 million strikeouts in the season. I mean, he just had a ridiculous season. Ridiculous. Wrong. I mean, human beings aren't supposed to do the things that he did, and he did it, and they give it to Palmer?
Mm.
And I'm not taking anything away from Palmer. I can't. The guy was a great pitcher, with, you know, but, I mean,
No, but, I mean, even... years later, decades later, we're not talking about Palmer as a pitcher. We're talking about Nolan Ryan.
Nolan Ryan. Exactly. A lot of people don't even know who Palmer is. They have no idea.
Right.
Well, he retired from announcing already several years ago. So there's nobody watching today. Anybody who's under 50 years old or 40, I'd say probably about 45. You don't know. You have no idea who the guy is. Never heard of him. Never seen him. Don't know anything about him. But I'm pretty sure you've heard of Nolan Ryan.
Yeah.
And if you haven't.
And on top of it, when you watch a later version of Nolan Ryan, you're still watching a good version of Nolan Ryan. It wasn't like normal other people that got old and just kind of just went through the motions and got paid. You were like, this dude is still throwing 100 miles per hour.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that Nolan Ryan could have lasted one or maybe two more seasons if he hadn't retired? I'm going to have to go ahead and say yes, but... That's from a fan's perspective, but I really do think Nolan Ryan was feeling the pain. I don't care how big and strong of a man you are. You can't do what this guy was doing for 25, 26 seasons and not feel. Well, you know what? I watched this thing one time. This was a long time ago. I think I was in college when I watched it. And it was an interview with Nolan Ryan, and they had asked him. They said, you know... How, and he was still playing at this time. He says, how come you're never injured? And he says, I'll tell you why, because I pitch every single day. He goes, on the off season, I pitch every single day. He goes, I throw my arm every single day. When I get done, the next day, I'm throwing my arm. I'm throwing pitches every day. Well, look at these pitchers. They can't even go five innings anymore, these little prima donnas. And then they got 4 days off, and then they don't, you know. No wonder your freaking arm is broke. Because, you know, you can't just rest your arm for 4 days and then come out and try to throw 90-plus miles an hour and then let it go, and then your arm get. No, you can't do that. You got to work that arm. And I think, I still believe that if you want to get a win as a pitcher in the major leagues, you got to go seven innings, not five. That's half a game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's half a game. You want to win, you earn it. Seven innings you go, at least. And if you can't do it, I mean, no, they coddle these pitchers. I mean, and they do that in the minors. That's what's really happening. The minor leagues are training these guys to be.
And it is so crazy that Shohei Ohtani is not only one of the best hitters, home run hitters, whatever, one of the best pitchers in the league. And he actually, just the other day against the Detroit Tigers, got his first complete game.
Well, literally, I guarantee you,
last week,
he on the off season, he's pitching, he's hitting, he don't give up. You can't do the things that this guy does and not train every single day. Babe Ruth was an anomaly.
Yes.
Mickey Mantle was an anomaly. And Mickey Mantle bragged about, no, I don't lift weights. I don't train. I don't do anything. I drink. That was Mickey Mantle,
yeah,
though. You know.
One liver transplant later.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, just think, you know, and Casey Stengel. You know, loved Mickey, but he was very difficult to Mickey. He was very hard on him. He literally, you know, he was very, very, very hard on Mickey. And Mickey was only 19, 20 at the time. Well, Casey was hard on him for a reason, saying, kid, you could be just absolutely phenomenal if you take care of yourself. But Mickey wasn't that kind of guy. But just imagine if Mickey Mantle trained every single day and didn't go out drinking. And the numbers that he did when he was boozing and this and that, just think of the numbers he could have had. And same with Babe Ruth. I mean, Babe Ruth was just different.
Right.
But you know, those guys are different because the league was played different. The mentality was different. Everything was different. Now today, athletes like Tom Brady's. I mean, Tom Brady doesn't eat nothing goes in his mouth that isn't 100% pure. I mean, the guy drinks his dinner with these shakes and these vitamins and this and that. He doesn't eat any meat.
I couldn't even say it even more quinoa.
Yeah, he doesn't even eat bread. I mean, the guy just, I don't know what he eats, but whatever the hell this guy is eating obviously does the trick. And here's something else. And I talked to Brother X the other day, and I want to get your guys' opinion on this. Now, we do know that Garoppolo, he's now with the Raiders. Well, we do know that Garoppolo does have a bad habit of getting injured. So I looked it up, and I said, wouldn't that be great? The Raiders could play the Jets and Tom Brady could have to suit up and come out. Well, guess what? Guess what week 10 is, which is right around the time where Garoppolo's going to go down and then Tom Brady has to come and suit up with the Raiders to play Aaron Rodgers? Oh, please. Oh, I mean, that'll never happen, but isn't that a great story? Tom Brady comes out of retirement, suits up for the Raiders. The Raiders. And he has to play
one time.
And he has to play Aaron Rodgers against the mighty new Jets? Oh, absolutely. That would win. I guarantee you, people who never even heard of the sport of football are going to be tuning into that game. But,
I will.
Oh, man. I'd be taping it. But that ain't going to happen. But wouldn't that be a great story? If Tom Brady comes in week 10 and then beats Aaron Rodgers? Oh, please. No. But, hey, I mean, who's to say that it won't happen, though? Who's to say that Tom Brady may not have to suit up? He may have to suit up. let me see this. I think it's the Jets. Let's see this. Let me try it again. Week 10. I think it was week 10. And, yep. And that would be, this is a Sunday night game, too. So this is New York Jets in Las Vegas. So the Raiders are at home. This is a Sunday night game, 8:20 p.m. week 10. Tom Brady comes out in Vegas. Oh, please. I guarantee you that'd be the game of the century. But how well would he really play, though? Well, Tom Brady, I'd say he'd do pretty good. I would bet more money on that he would be doing a good job than a bad job. How good of a job? Well, that's, I don't know. But I would be more apt to put most of my money on he would do a good job. At least keep them competitive throughout the game, whether they win or lose. But
right.
Still, imagine that, though. Well, we do have an interesting season this year. Again, like I said, Burrow, he's already injured. But we don't really know. I mean, a lot of that could be fake. Or just to psych out other teams. So I'm not taking a lot of stock into that. Oh, he's out for several weeks. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, the NFL is famous for fakery. You know, and Belichick was perfect for that. I mean, every single Sunday. Well, is Tom Brady going to play? Oh, we don't know. Questionable. We don't know. He's day to day. We have no idea whether he's going to play today or not. And this is like, you know, an hour before game time. You know, and then he comes out and throws, you know, six TD passes. And Yeah. So you can't really buy into too much of these injuries. And the NFL loves to fake injuries. When there's not an injury, they'll keep a player out just because they want to save him, or they want to take a player out because of this. And, you know, who knows? But this year, though, I mean, you know, it's always difficult to pick out who is going to win the Super Bowl, you know, before the season starts, because there's really no way. It's just a guess. But, I know, and Lou, you are a Jets fan, and I still believe this is the Jets' season to lose. It's theirs. Yes. They own it. If they want it, they will get it. It's right there. All they got to do is reach out and grab it. I think they've got the tools to do it. And Rodgers ain't going to last much longer. This is going to be his 20th year in the NFL. He's got to do it this year or nothing.
You're right. There isn't much time for him. And, you know, he's way past his prime. So if he doesn't do it this year, we get it. But you understand, like, 1 year doesn't seem like a fair deal. They gave up a lot for me, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think we may have 1 year.
Well, look, I mean, most teams don't mind giving up the farm. As long as they put a ring on their finger, that's all that matters.
Right. But considering his age, you know.
But I've watched some of him in practice, and I don't think Aaron Rodgers has lost a step. Not that I can see, anyway.
He lost his marbles a bit, but that's a...
Well, yeah, he lost his marbles a long time ago. I mean, those marbles were gone years ago, and that's probably what makes him good.
Mind too, as well as sound body, and his mind doesn't seem to be so sound right now. So, you know.
Well, and just watching the brief clips that I have seen him in practice, and the guy looks just as focused as he was when the Packers were the Packers. The guy's got a focus. He's got, I don't know if it's these magic mushrooms or what the hell it is, but, oh, we just got a somebody from the chat room. Nigeria shocked the Aussies in Brisbane, 3-2. Before a sold-out crowd by the Women's World Cup. Well, good for Nigeria. As yeah. much as I hate to
and
say it.
And thank God for those mushrooms.
Yeah. Well, there's probably good mushrooms in Nigeria. There's probably peyote, yeah. all kinds of stuff. You don't know yeah. some of that jungle roots and jungle weed? You could, oh, good God.
Yeah.
But no, the focus in Rogers right now, he really, he just seems to be in a different level. And I really do believe he wants it that bad. And I think he's going to get it. I think he's going to get it. So what else you got, Seth? Do we have anything more?
Actually, I have a trivia question.
Uh-oh.
All righty.
Yeah. So with Major League Baseball parks, what is the most common name at the end of the name for a venue?
Say that one more time.
What is the most common name for the last name of a venue for the MLB teams? And I'll give you the two least to start off. Coliseum and Center. So Toronto and Oakland. Oakland Coliseum. The Toronto, whatever, center. So what are the most famous parts called for a MLB team?
Oh, for an MLB team. Okay, you either got stadium, you got park, or you got
yeah.
field. I would say field.
Well, you just named all of it. Yes.
Stadium.
What is it, field?
It is park.
Oh, park. Oh,
43%
field.
35% field and 17% stadium.
Interesting. I was saying, because now they've got all these new cockamamie corporate names, and they put field at the end of it.
Is right.
Which I don't
yep.
believe. I don't like that. I like
yep,
the stadiums
yep,
named
yep.
after people that are part of the community.
Yeah, yeah, park is still
yeah.
the most famous. Now, actually, though, the other day, this is not a part of sports history, but it kind of became a part of it. The Braves hit an 8-3-5 triple play. The last time that it happened was 1884.
So your center fielder got the ball through, what, to second base, and then they threw it to first? How did that happen?
8-3-5 triple play. And the last time it happened was 1884. And the Boston Bean Eaters did against the Providence Quarry.
8-3-5. So that's going from center field to first base to third base?
Yeah.
How the hell did that happen? There had to have been somebody screwed up. Somebody, it had to have been.
I'm just saying.
I mean,
in the history of the game, ever.
What year was that? What year was that?
1884 was the
no.
last time.
No, when was the Braves did it? What year was the Braves do it?
Oh, they just did the other day this week.
Oh, really? So
yeah.
they
yeah,
obviously had
insane.
To have the bases loaded and something. Somebody screwed up somewhere. How do you go from 8-3-5 double play? That's
triple play.
Oh, so the center fielder caught the ball. The first baseman, the guy on first was running to second. He throws the ball to first, and then he throws the ball to third. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a hell of a feat to throw the ball from center field to first. Well, I mean, obviously it was a shallow.
Well, it's the second time ever in baseball history since 1884. So, yes. It doesn't happen a lot, but I thought I would mention it.
No, that is kind of cool, though. Well, there was also some guy, he did, the guy that, it was the Cubbies, and they're 9 out of 10 right now, and he did it last night. He caught, it was, the score was 3-2. There was a guy on, I think, first or third. I think he was on first. Well, the batter had, and it was clearly going to go out. Well, the center fielder caught the ball and ended the game, 2 outs, bottom of the ninth. Well, that, he's the only player to do that twice, to catch a home run ball, to steal a home run, to end a game-winning home run. The only guy who's ever done it twice in the major league. So when he caught the ball, he didn't just end the inning. He ended the game. And it would have been a walk-off home run both times if he had not caught the ball. That is only once in a lifetime, and this guy's done it twice?
Wow.
Well, who was the Cardinals player? Remember, Seth, this was about... Oh, God, about 15 years ago, maybe 20, where he hit 2 grand slams in one inning?
Yeah, he was basically the Cardinals' Yankee Scott Brosius. He was that guy.
Brosius?
Whatever his name was.
Yeah, well, he doesn't. Well, nobody knows his name because he didn't make it very far. But, I mean, hey, look, hitting a grand slam, first of all, is not easy. And here we have, you know, the Iron Man hit 19 grand slams. Well, that's been beaten. Who has the record now for the most grand slams? Is it, what's his name? Cabrera?
Nelson Cabrera?
Could be.
Oh, I know the record was beaten, 19, and that record lasted since, well, he did it in the 20s. Lou Gehrig did it, I think, in the 20s, and it lasted, he did it throughout his career. And he ended his career in, like, the late 30s or whatever it was, 35, 36. It was a couple of years after Babe Ruth retired, but 19 grand slams? I mean, most players are lucky to get one.
Right.
Yeah.
Derek Jeter bragged about, I finally got one. You know, he got a grand slam. Well, look at, let me look up. Who has the most grand slams in baseball? Alex Rodriguez currently holds the record for the most career grand slams with 25? 23 grand slams. Lou Gehrig held the all. Oh, I thought it was 19. Okay, so Lou Gehrig had 23. Okay, well, I would be just as happy with 19. But you're going to go 23? I mean, that's gravy. But I did not know Alex Rodriguez had more. I thought it was... Alex Rodriguez, Lou Gehrig, Manny Ramirez, believe that or not, had 21.
Manny's just being Manny.
And then we got Eddie Murray with 19. Now, get this. Then we go from 25 to 23 to 21 to 19. And then we drop down to reality, back down to earth. we have got 18 who tied with 5.
Yeah.
And then 7 and then 8. I mean, wow. 18 are five of them are tied for 18. But still, I mean, getting one grand slam, it's a that's kind of hard to do, you know? I mean,
right.
When you got the bases loaded and you're a good hitter, the pitcher's not going to give you – he's not going to give you a meatball. You know, he's going to – you know?
Oh, yeah. So even have 10 grand slams, you're like, that is pretty incredible. To have 20 plus, you're like – wow.
Willie McCovey.
Field.
But Robin Ventura, when he tried to fight Nolan Ryan, this guy's got 18 grand slams. I did not think Ventura had 18 grand slams. I never, ever would have suspected that one. No way. Eddie Murray or Willie McCovey? Yeah, I could see McCovey probably doing it, but not Ventura. Ted Williams has 17. I could see Ted Williams. You know, but where's Babe Ruth in this? Hank Aaron has 16.
Yeah.
Babe Ruth has 16. So they both got 16. Okay. Well, 16 grand slams? That's pretty good.
Remarkable.
Boy, here in New York, we've just got extremely dark and the wind. I got the trees horizontal right now. I'm looking out my window. Yeah. Holy moly. Well, that's New York. New York is famous for summer storms. Seth,
yes,
you know about summer storms in New York. Thunder,
oh,
lightning,
yeah,
and all kinds of crazy stuff. Well, we do got about 1 minute left. This show went pretty quick. Too bad Viper got cut off. But I thought we covered some pretty good ground tonight. We covered some interesting things. Lou, do we have anything? You think we got 60 seconds left? Did we miss anything?
Might be a little bit short. But if you guys get a chance right before your show begins, come check out my show on Saturdays 4 to 6 p.m., The Enhanced Sports Show. Dial 512-543-4662. Between 4 and 6, and we cover almost everything in the world of sports. So, Captain,
okay, well,
try to call in.
Well, hey, let me, because I had it written down before, and I think a lot. So I'm going to write this down again, and I'm going to put it on my thing here so I can't forget it. And
okay.
So the audience can actually hear you.
512-543-4662. I'll see you guys.